All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue. I will remind you guys that attorney Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, he is the daily sponsor of the Right Side Way, and I'll tell you more about Stan here in just a few minutes. All right. So I was getting ready for the show, working on that dipper that's number two called Indivisible, the new BLM. And I got to say, in case you haven't noticed, there's actually an entire cottage industry right now built around what I would call manufactured outrage. Think about it. Manufactured outrage. Groups like BLM, Antifa, and others have been joined by a new group now called Indivisible. Indivisible is the latest band of charlatans taking money from George Soros to manufacture outrage and to foment discord. Supposedly, they're actually protesting in Huntsville today. I'm not sure if they did or not. Hadn't heard any news updates, but we'll check. We'll see. But one look at their website will tell you all you need to know. The so-called Indivisible Toolkit encourages people to march on their elected officials' offices. Tell them your demands. Tell them that you are outraged. That's their words, not mine. It's nothing but the creation and the channeling of the baser emotions. Anger, angst, fear, futility, desperation. And they make millions doing it. By telling people that the worst of their fears are realized unless and until they act out their frustrations, even to the extent of sometimes breaking the law. Recent reports right now are implicating Indivisible in the Tesla protests. I read a piece published in the Stanford Law Journal called The Outrage Industrial Complex. I didn't agree with everything the author said, but I did agree that there's a trend towards maximizing outrage without purpose because the stoker of the outrage is gaining from it. The author of that article, it was really good though, actually, The Outrage Industrial Complex, the author of that article said at one point, here's his quote, "The outraged themselves fall victim to the same corrosive anger they hope to direct at the power structure. We are all locked," he said, "in an arms race of outrage in which stalemate is the only possible outcome. And of course," he said, "stalemate favors the status quo. The expression of outrage is no longer a form of effective political protest. Instead, it's just an aesthetically debased form of entertainment." Wow. You break that down, and what you really see is he's absolutely right. They claim to be trying to fix things that are outrageous, but they become outraged in the process of doing so. And they get into an arms race of outrage. And then next thing you know, they're not changing things at all. All they've done is become this kind of weird version of clickbait entertainment. Yeah, he's not wrong. Outrage loses something when it's flooding the airwaves, when there's no result. I'm going to go out on a limb here too and say that the focusing of anger or disappointment is never going to be a truly effective means for effecting change without being coupled at least with one other key ingredient. If you want to be angry about something and get something done, you have to have it coupled with morality. Anger that is immoral is also unjust. Anger that is immoral is not likely to resonate with good people who need to be convinced to join the movement. Charlene and I were talking about this a while back. At some point, we were discussing world events and the former Biden administration's response to things and how frustrating it was to watch them dither along, afraid to offend even the worst offenders, equivocating on this, apologizing for that, working so hard to be inclusive they never took a stand for anything. She said that she had heard a pundit ask in regard to Biden, "Where's the moral outrage?" And my wife's response was epic. I said something about it, but then she said, "No, you got to have morals where you can have moral outrage." Wow. Nailed it. Nailed it. I mean, you look at the anger baiters. There's a sense of morality that's missing in them. I'm talking about things like decency. I'm not talking about inclusivity. I'm not talking about earnest beliefs. I'm talking about morality. The actual ability to differentiate between right and wrong, to know that some decisions or actions, regardless of your personal desires, they can still be immoral if you pursue them that way. I mean, like, for instance, I can decide that something is worth doing, but I am immoral if I steal your money to get it done. I can decide that I think something is important for the environment, but I am immoral if I force you against your will to take part in it. I can decide that I think kids should know things, but I am immoral if I force those beliefs over the wishes of the parents. So let me give you another example, just kind of out of the blue here. You ready for this? Remember the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Stay with me here. It was a 1968 classic starring Dick Van Dyke, a musical. I used to love that movie as a kid, except for that one character that really creeped me out. He was simply known as the Child Catcher. Remember him? Man, he was creepy. Wore a long, colorful coat, crumpled black top hat, had a long pointed nose, and he skipped along with hands full of candy and a wagon decorated like a carnival ride. He would skulk around, ringing a little bell, calling for children, promising them free candy and ice cream and delightful treats if they'd step into his wagon. The dude was a full-on child trafficker with a handful of sweets. And yes, it was creepy. It was even creepier, though, when you realize that his deception and trickery was being played out on young children at the request of his government. Because in the movie, the king himself is the one who employed the child catcher. And the child catcher was very good at his job. He took pride in it. You see, the king didn't like children. They made him angry and afraid. But he chose an immoral solution to channel it. So we're watching right now in real life here as the anger industrial complex stokes fear and loathing toward Elon Musk. Why? Because he's aligned with their worst enemy, Donald Trump. So now you have Tesla dealerships being vandalized. You have Nazi swastikas being scratched into Tesla cars in parking lots. You have charging stations being burned. You don't like Musk? Fine. But when you couple your anger with immorality, it never goes well. And we can see it in the NGOs. We see it in the riots. We see it in the seizing of campus buildings. We see it in the takeover of city blocks, renaming them things like Chop Zone or Occupy Wall Street. The anger industrial complex stirs them up, and their immorality makes them act it out. And then there is the quiet anger, the other version. The quiet anger, the one that happens behind the scenes, coupled with immorality, when people try to act out their angry agendas in subversive ways. Like when closet activists pose as bureaucrats and decide that their trusted positions in federal government gets them the ability to do things like, I don't know, put transgender ideology in front of kids in schools. And no, I'm not talking about the open attempts to put guys in women's sports. I'm talking about sneakier stuff than that. Like the time that anger and immorality coupled together to create a mandatory quote-unquote survey that kids had to take to help explore their potential for transgenderism. Their potential for transgenderism. Here's how it works. You see, in 1992, Congress enacted what was known as the Sinar Amendment. It required states to pass state-level legislation to prohibit the sale of tobacco to minors. Okay. The Department of Health and Human Services was then mandated to begin withholding federal funds to states who did not comply. So over time, all the states began to enact their own laws, and they met the standards of Congress. And in 2011, the CDC began conducting what they called the annual National Youth Tobacco Survey, with target audience being middle school and high school students. All right, so they want to know if kids are smoking, right? Well, yes, at first. But in the last few years, the activists who masquerade as government bureaucrats, they realized they had a golden opportunity. They were already getting in front of kids on a congressionally mandated issue, so why not use that as a vehicle to get to kids on other things as well? Why not? It's important, right? They believe it's for the greater good, except they lacked a moral foundation to do it. They co-opted the National Youth Tobacco Survey, and they began using it to give actual instructive descriptions with follow-on questions about transgenderism for minors. You heard me. Like one of the questions, which actually read this way. It said, quote, "Sexual orientation is a person's emotional, romantic, and/or sexual attraction to another person. And there are many ways a person can describe their sexual orientation, many labels a person can use. Which of these options best describes your sexual orientation?" And the options that were then given for sixth graders, were you can choose straight or heterosexual, gay or lesbian, bisexual, pansexual, queer or asexual. If you go back to the beginning on the first page, it said it was a tobacco survey. Y'all, this reminds me of the creepy child catcher, the immoral deceiver, prideful kidnapper doing what his government sent him to do, walking around with hands full of candy trying to lure kids in. So yeah, back to the question of moral outrage. My sweet Charlene was right. You got to have actual morals before you can have moral outrage. And what I see from groups like Indivisible and other members of the outrage industrial complex, it tells me they don't qualify. They have anger, fear, and loathing, but no good decisions come from being steeped in just a cauldron of boiling emotions, especially when you couple it with a lack of a moral foundation like theirs. And that's a wrap with the Right Side Way.